Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, my friends. This is Mickey Desai. I am your host for today's episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I have the honor of sitting here with a new friend, Belisa Urbina. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, you are.
And Belisa is the executive director of Ser Familia, which has two offices in Atlanta. Is that right?
We have four offices.
Four offices. Mm-hmm. And you and your husband founded the organization.
That's correct.
How do you do that? How do you go from founding an organization to getting it funded to growing it to making sure it's sustainable? I mean, there's going to be a lot to talk about, but how do you do that? How do you go from square one to what I'm looking at as a very successful operation?
It is a long road. It is a difficult road. Certainly worth it. We started actually as a ministry instead of church, a couples ministry. My husband and I moved in from Puerto Rico. Over there, we were volunteers of a couples program. When we moved here 20 years ago, we started looking for another couples program in Spanish. People usually ask you why in Spanish, because you can speak English. And my answer is always that, you know, your relationships happen in the language, and our relationship, my husband and I have been married for almost 35 years, and our relationship happens in Spanish. So we wanted something in our native language. That's the language of my feelings, of his feelings. So it started as a ministry in a church, and we realized right away the need for that type of service. We uncover other needs that were unmet as well, like parenting classes, programs for young people, Latino young people. And we started responding to those needs very organically, in the beginning, only volunteers. But, we got a lot of good people. I got many good mentors in the process that steered me in the correct direction. I have done a lot of education. Actually, I studied marketing. So this is not my background. Social services certainly was not my strong point. But I have, you know, registered in classes. I have attended classes. I have found very good mentors. I guess the humbleness of saying, I don't know what to do. Can you steer me in the right direction? Can you help me? Can you guide me? And then now I am blessed enough to be able to guide and help others that are starting in that journey.
Okay. So this started out of church service.
Mm-hmm,
when correct. Did you develop the mission? And did the mission grow, or has the mission stayed the same the entire time?
No, the mission certainly grew, because in the beginning it was only couples and it was more in a religious setting. Now we are a civil nonprofit that serves the various needs of Latino families. We do a lot of coordination between mental health counseling services, social services, family services, case management. We do some legal services. So we coordinate all of those areas and provide a multitude of services that are culturally and linguistically proficient for Latinos.
And you and your husband are still involved in operations.
Yes, that's our life now. This completely overtook our lives. We have five children. The five children have been involved in the organization at some point or another.
Mm-hmm.
So it became a family affair. It is what we do.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the mission. What is the mission?
The mission of Ser Familia is to provide, Latino families with communication, leadership, skills so they can thrive and then have healthy family and relationships.
Right. And from a strategic point of view, how often do you revisit the mission?
We try to revisit the mission, you know, at every board meeting. We have also monthly staff meetings, and we go over that. I think that we have been very, very clear that every program, every grant that we write, any effort that we undertake, you know, with the organization has to fit in our mission. You know, with our grant writer, you know, normally she could bring this great opportunity, but she knows very well that if it doesn't fit the mission, I'll be the first one to say, no, this sounds great, but this is out of what we do. So I think maintaining that clarity of what our mission is and what it is not,
mm-hmm.
is very important for a nonprofit, so we don't lose ourselves. Because right. It's very easy just to follow the money. There's money for this, and then we go do that. But then we have to stop doing what we were doing and right. what is our core.
It can be a very dangerous thing for other nonprofits.
And I have seen over 20 years that we have been doing this, I have seen many nonprofits sadly lose their sight and lose their path because they, you know, they don't keep the eyes on the ball, which is mm-hmm. the mission.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we've talked about the mission. I think it's really good that you guys revisit your mission quite regularly. How did you get it funded? How did you get it out of the, how did you take it out of the church into its own thing?
In the beginning, it was a lot of in-kind from volunteers, from people that donated their time, donated food for the programs, space for the programs. But eventually, it was funny because actually we got our 501c3 letter probably by the second, third year that we started. We did nothing with that for 5 years. It was sitting in a drawer in my desk because I didn't even know what to do. So whenever anybody asked me, you know, are you a nonprofit? Yes, I am. And we did our 990s and everything, but I yeah. didn't even know what to do with it. I remember first time, you know, this organization, a local organization here in Cobb County gave us some money and they were like, you should be getting a lot of money writing grants. And I was like, how do you do that? What is a grant? How did it even start with that? So she was the one that told me, okay, there's this organization in the city mm-hmm. and they do a lot of classes. So I went online, I registered myself and I started studying, going to school for it. It was the Georgia Center for Nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one thing I always say that you just need to find the person that has the key that opens the door. You will open this door and then in that room, you're going to find another person with another key. And, you know, I know it's cliche, but it's about relationships. You know, I think I have never met somebody that I absolutely dislike. So I like people. I like talking to people. I like engaging with them. I think that, you know, my personality helps a little bit because I truly enjoy people and I think people can feel it.
Sure. But I think you're right. I think that, a big piece of the equation is relationships. And I don't think that will ever get cliche. At least I hope it doesn't because it's simply the truth. Networking is a huge piece of the game anymore. And you've met a ton of cool people along the way that have helped grow this thing. And how did you get the guidance? How did you get from the point of, okay, I have this 501c3 letter that's sitting in my drawer to, okay, let's get organized and actually put a fundraising agenda behind this and organize your board and all those little steps that have to come into place before, before success really materializes?
I think that we did have a lot of passion. We still do have a lot of passion, but I think that now it is very well educated. Mm-hmm. We are educating our passion so that it becomes useful. So I think that, you know, once I learned the idea behind writing a grant, I wrote the first one. And, you know, when I got a no, obviously, I called and I say, can you tell me why can I do better next time? Mm. And I accepted that criticism, you know, very positively. So I started getting better and better. And finally, I got my first one. And it is the coolest experience ever. So from there, I says, okay, I think I can do this. So what can I do? And I remember the first time that I was ready to write a federal grant. I was like, this is big. This is much bigger than what I had ever done. So then, one of the consultants that I have met, you know, in my road, I went to him and I said, I'm writing this big federal grant and I don't have the proficiency to do it. I need help. And then he steered me in the right direction. Okay. This person can help you do that. She will learn. She will teach you. She will guide you. She will help you. And now eventually I got the confidence of doing one on my own and I got it. So it's a lot about, you know, having that idea, that humbleness of knowing where your limits are. What do you need to do better? Asking for help, accepting criticism. And then obviously the second biggest piece was creating a board of directors that was not, you know, being a founder, you want to retain control and you sometimes, you know, the temptation is to have a board of directors that would be, yes, men and women.
Right.
But that's not good for Ser Familia. I need people that, you know, would oppose me and would say, no, this is not. And, you know, people with strong characters, with the contacts, with the knowledge. And I think they have a fantastic board of directors, and they are certainly, they have their own minds. We don't see eye to eye every time, but all of us do love the organization and the mission. And I know that even on those days that we don't see eye to eye, they are looking out for Ser Familia and for the families that we serve. So it would be difficult sometimes, but, you know, by creating good relationships, you're going to find people that are going to fall in love with the mission. And then is getting the courage to ask, okay, can you join us? You know, I remember for the first time asking this person that had a big title that I was like, he's not going to be interested. Well, this teeny weeny, he's not going to be interested in the organization, but what's the worst that can happen? He will say no.
Exactly.
But what about? He said yes. And when he said yes, then other people got interested. And then, you know, little by little, you get, you know, people that have more contacts, that have more knowledge, that would be great advisors in moments of difficulty, which we have had our share of those. So I think it's all about, you know, once again, creating relationships with the right people.
Mm-hmm. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the fundraising stream, because you've got, it sounds like you've done a really great job of finding the right passionate people for the board. But the way I tend to look at things, the board is sort of the engine. The board and staff is a nonprofit engine, but what fuels it is the fundraising, obviously. So if the fundraising is a pie chart, what percentage of your funds come from grants? What percentage come from individual contributions? What percentage, you know, how would you describe the breakdown?
You just said something really important. Mm-hmm. There's no money, there's no mission. Mm-hmm. You can have the best intentions. If there's no money to fund it, there's nothing is going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I do agree. Fundraising is it. Right now, about 70 to 72% of everything we get is grants.
Grant funded.
Mainly, our biggest grantor is the federal government through different funding streams. We have then private foundations. We have family foundations. Right now, individual contributions is a very small part. I think that is probably our biggest area of growth will be corporations and individuals. We have been working towards that, but certainly we are not even close to what we could do with that. So that's a big area of potential. We do fundraising events, but even if they are successful, there's not an organization that can say, oh, we're going to leave out of fundraising events. It's a lot of work, and, you know, they can give you money, but not certainly never they are going to give you enough money to sustain the organization. So I think that creating the right mix is important, because you cannot depend on a single, you know, revenue stream. It's too dangerous, especially since we have decided that first, our clients, none of our clients is a client that only depends on a grant. All of our clients are what we call hybrids. We get one client and we design a plan, a family plan for that client and that family. And then we're going to see which of our funding streams are going to help that client. So you can have one single client getting services through 8 or 10 different funding streams. Very complicated to manage. We do it. Obviously, that's our biggest step last year was putting everything on the cloud. Everything is not paper anymore.
Right.
And then on the same token, whenever we hire an employee, I never hire an employee for a grant. Mm-hmm. I hire an employee for Ser Familia. That helps them have commitment with the organization, the understanding that we need to work together, because you are not paid only with this grant money or that grant money. Everybody's salary is a piece of all of those revenue streams.
Right.
You know, we might have a couple that are 100% through one revenue stream, which is pretty big for us. But then it's just creating that idea that it is, you know, it is an effort from everybody.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. So you had the wherewithal. Is that where the business experience came into play initially, in terms of trying to figure out how to really define that culture, or how did you do that? I mean, a lot of nonprofits, I think, would be in a position to really move from grant to grant and to grant. And we know several that only hire grant specific positions. And as soon as the grant is finished, the project's over. And
I think that's tragic because then you're going to hire somebody that from the day one, that person knows you're going to fire him or her eventually. So how much commitment and passion that person is going to have when they know that they're going to be with you for a short period. So, you know, bringing somebody knowing that I will do everything in my power to keep you. If you're a good employee, you know, I'm hoping to keep you forever because that turnover is a killer for nonprofits because the learning curve in most nonprofits, at least it is in ours, is pretty steep. There's a lot to learn. There's a lot to teach. So then when that person is understanding the job, you fire them. That would be insane in any business. How do we think it's going to be okay for a nonprofit?
Right.
We are a business at the end of the day. We're in the business of helping people, but we are a business nonetheless.
Well, I'm going to say, and we may edit this out, but we see many businesses that have no loyalty to their human capital at all. In order to, you know, keep people loyal and keep them close to you is the way to preserve all that. And I obviously think that's the right way to go about doing it. But I mean, the regular working world does not share the same sense of loyalty.
I agree with you. Yeah. And sadly, you know, it's getting worse. You know, probably for my parents, my dad worked his whole life for the same company and he worked with them until he retired. My mom worked 48 years for the same hospital. So that is not the case with most people right now. But I think that we need as companies, nonprofit or for profit, we need to do better to make the people that we hire loyal to us by behaving loyally.
Mm-hmm. This is great. Can we do another episode, part two, to continue this conversation?
Sure.
Great. And this is Mickey Desai sitting with Belisa of Ser Familia. We're going to do episode two, and we'll see you again in about a week. Thanks for joining us.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.